Howard Lindzen is the founder and general partner at Social Leverage. All opinions expressed by Howard and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Social Leverage or StockTwits. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for decisions. Guests may maintain positions and securities discussed in this podcast.
Knut!
Howie!
Have you been outside today? You've been locked in this room. I've seen
I have been locked in things. Here.
You know how gorgeous it is, that?
No.
You know what? You know why I was late?
I haven't been
you
outside.
You know why I was late?
No.
It's hiking.
Shit.
Yeah. Because I'm the boss.
I'm just so envious right now.
I tell you, I rarely get excited. And there's no joke there. I just rarely get excited.
Ellen agree?
Sometimes when I see a little hair come out of my forehead, not out of my back, that's when I get excited. There's like signs of life on a part of my body that I actually would like to see hair. And
you don't expect a response to that, do you?
No, please be quiet. By the way, you have to put that painting that Bane got me. Looking at it, I just can't take myself seriously.
That's right.
That thing is hilarious. So we have a special guest today. And by special guest, I mean he's made me money. So we
me too,
people.
I think.
Oh, you were into Mogul as well?
I think I was in. Wasn't he one of the funds?
Yeah. He's
in
multiple of the funds. He was calling you Newt earlier, and I said, just don't call him Gingrich at the end of the
perfectly
I said, the
okay.
K is loud.
I've heard so many versions of my name, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But I appreciate it.
I prefer to spell backwards Tunk. hello, Tunk. Is that Knut? Did anybody ever do that to you?
Yes.
Okay. Well, it's not that interesting. What would Haunts be? Haunts is...
Snah.
You're Snah. And Morton, I don't know. Well, anyways, we've digressed enough already.
I believe we
it's
have.
A beautiful day here in Phoenix, and I'm really excited. I don't have to do any prep because Brett Wilson is a investor, mostly entrepreneur. He's about to embark on some investing. But board member, public board member, but... took a startup back when it wasn't cool in 2006, 2007, one of the first video tech companies. I was a seed investor. And I call them the red eyes to nowhere, where you take a red eye flight hoping to do some business and the meeting's about 5 minutes and you're on your way home. The old red eye to nowhere where you're all excited and you're like planning and nothing happens. So we've been there, done that, took his company public. To Mogul in 2010 maybe. And
we'll find out.
The company was eventually acquired by Adobe. Then he spent some time at Adobe. You know Adobe.
I do.
You may even want to ask some questions. I give you two. I bless you with two questions this podcast.
That's very Knut, nice of you. But, you know,
Tunk,
don't worry about it.
And Tunk the Hunk could be your name amongst my two or three female. Out of 400,000 there, I've done some research on my Twitter handle. There's three women. So we're going to get Brett on. We're going to talk about life as a CEO, the true grind, the pivots, and video. I mean, no one's been at the center of this video boom in the web. So I want to hear what he thinks about TikTok and Netflix and the whole shebang. And he was just on the board of Tubi that was acquired, T-U-B-I, that was acquired by Fox. Enough about me. Let's get Brett on the phone.
Sounds good.
Brett Wilson.
Hey, guys.
How is ya?
I'm good, brother. Good to talk to you.
It's great to talk to
and,
you.
And Knut, sorry, I got your name wrong.
It's oh, Knut.
Perfectly
it's,
okay.
It's new to you. It's off, Tunk.
Off air, I'll tell you about some other ones that I've
never,
heard.
Brett's never met a Norwegian. He's very American. So I was telling about our red-eyed in nowhere. Aren't those the worst?
Yeah, we did a couple of those together back in the day, didn't we?
Yeah, they're supposed to lead to something, and all they led to was a credit card bill. That,
I was thinking the other day when I first met you, we had started TubeMogul, and we were like, you know, three guys in a basement.
2007?
Yeah, that's probably right.
So you're still in the college program at Berkeley?
Yep, we had graduated, we had gotten an MBA at Berkeley, and they gave us a little bit of free space in their incubator, which was in the basement of a hotel. It was not very glamorous, but we'd started this company in the video space, and we had a booth at a trade show called the New Media Expo. It was like wow. in Ontario or some suburb of LA, and you were giving a keynote. And
can you hear that? We knew you. Then.
Impressive.
Yeah.
It was, well, you were kind of, that was your first wave of fame because of Wall Strip, the video blog. And you were talking about Wall Strip, and in the middle of your keynote, you start talking about TubeMogul. And we've never met before, and our like jaws dropped. And we met you afterwards, and you invested. That was the start of our friendship.
And that is really how I started investing better, because invest in the products that make my life easier. TubeMogul, no one had heard of it, but TubeMogul was the hack, the invention was, let me see if I get this right. I was at Labes, you remember Labes? Can you, we would make a video and then fucking send it to like that 7,000 video. Everybody was starting a video company, right? There was a group, there was hundreds, right? And I'm having senior moments. Rever and I don't know.
Daily Motion, Metacafe.
So I'd have to send these links, and I don't even know how to do this today. I can't even work my Google Calendar. Note to self: fix the Google Calendar. So I would like count up. Oh, we got 6 views on Rever and 5 views, and then Labes walks in with TubeMogul and he goes, "You got to try like this thing. One link sends it everywhere. It's like RSS, right?" So what was the original idea?
Well, it was 2007, and we were all beginning to watch TV online for the first time, and it was really novel, and YouTube had not won. It was just one of many video sharing sites, and if you remember, there was a lot of venture capital money going into video sharing sites, so there were dozens and dozens of these.
Yes, they were like SPACs.
And, yeah, exactly. And if you remember, like it was kind of a pain to get your video to any one site. So our initial tool was a piece of software where you could upload a video and a set of metadata once and then super syndicate it out to all of those sites in one fell swoop. Now, we ended up pivoting 4 times, but that's where we started.
Some of my favorite companies did pivot. You, Buddy Media. It was an era where you had to pivot because the it was evil. It was the beginning of evil, right? The Facebooks, the media companies were pivoting. Everybody was like making life miserable. But it was an interesting time because not only, and I want to go to the present quickly and then we can work our way back maybe, but what was amazing about that time was look where we are today. Like all of a sudden people stop trying and then TikTok becomes the video platform. No way I saw that coming. No way my kids saw that coming. No way anybody saw it coming. My daughter's sending me 5 TikToks a day.
Your bet on video, like that was your thesis, is that
correct?
Digital video is going to be huge. I don't know exactly where it's going to go. And that was our initial insight as well. That was right. You had to duck and weave and pivot to kind of figure out what to build that was going to be useful. But the initial bet was a good one. And I think a good chunk of the companies that started in that era had pretty good exits. Yeah.
Oh, my God. And my lesson to people who think they're good investors is what made that era special is that first there was a good crop of entrepreneurs and product market fit became hip. And there were so many good angel investors becoming institutionalized first round and Clavier and even us. But Fred Wilson and Spark and, oh my God, just hundreds of Roger Ehrenberg, hundreds. So, but that was so much, you know, growth because you LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, even the end of MySpace, you could just get on top of those platforms and milk them. And now they milk you. So what's changed is they milk you. We milk them.
But when, to your point, like when we started, there was no market. Like video advertising, it was zero online. And when we sold the company, it was like a $40 billion market.
Wow.
So we
and
got
what's
to
it now?
Ride of, I don't know. $40 billion is like the global figure, last time I checked. I'm sure it's bigger. I think last year, digital advertising kind of finally passed the size of the TV ad market, which has always been the largest of all ad markets. It's big.
That is massive. Okay, so let's flash forward today in video. So what has surprised you the most over 14 years of like seeing video from like where you thought it would be big to today, where it's finally like, and now probably people are underestimating it because it took so long. So that's the exciting part, is like you and I were there and like, I cannot believe how hard this is when it should have been easier. And now it's like people think everything's overvalued because it's so easy. But I'm like, no, we're just probably getting started. So what's the biggest surprises?
I think the biggest surprise is just how all of the waves come back. You know, initially, back in that world that we were talking about with all these video sharing sites, there was too much fragmentation. YouTube won. And it felt like there was some equilibrium in the world. And then all of these kind of streaming video services started to come out, where you're watching video, but through an app on your television. So Pluto, Disney Plus, Crackle, Tubi. And now all of a sudden we're overwhelmed with choice again. And now you're beginning to see consolidation in that market. So just seeing that trend kind of repeat over and over has been interesting.
It's fascinating, right? So now you're going to embark on investing. So I'm excited about that. And we can't really fully talk about it, but maybe we'll have you back when you're set up and squared up and writing checks, although you are writing checks. So how does the Wilson household, being the video guy, what is the you turn on the TV with what? What's the whole family? How many? What's the app to choices at the Wilson household?
You know, we don't have cable, so we're totally unplugged. Mm. So if we're ever watching a TV, which would be very rare, we're probably watching through a Roku device or an Amazon Stick.
Okay.
More often than not, I feel like content's kind of on a tablet in bed at night. We've got some gamers in our house. Uh-huh. So my son is on Discord all the time.
Wow. Uh-huh.
In fact, I took his headset and microphone to do the interview. It didn't work, but that was very traumatic for him.
You got cooties on, Dad.
And then my daughter's on TikTok all the time. And
making or just watching?
Both.
Okay.
Both. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I feel like I'm on Twitter. That's become my news source. Oh,
okay. But Netflix, you know, Roku, I finally bought the stock. I used it and I canceled it. And then I finally, because so many stock Twitch people were like, you got to get long Roku. And I did. I'm enjoying the ride. I don't get it, but it's just TV Guide.
I think basically, I mean, the thing about it is they've got like three different revenue streams. They've got the device revenue itself.
Sure.
Then they get a rev share of any ads that are sold on any Roku channels.
That's interesting.
If you want your app to be on a Roku device, I mean, they're monetizing that. And then they've got the Roku channel that they've got their own kind of ad-supported streaming video service as well. So behind the scenes, they've created a really great advertiser product so that they're bringing some of the power of digital, the stuff we like about Google AdWords and the Facebook advertising to TV ad buying. And they're probably the leader in that space right now.
So you're bullish on them?
You know, I mean, it's hard to rationalize any of the market caps.
Oh, forgetting market caps, just the companies. Take away the price.
Yes.
Directionally, company, that's all. Because everything's overpriced. So I only ask people now, don't tell me what you think. But I'm just saying directionally, how do they get unseated? Like, I think now I get it, because why wouldn't I want to put my channel on Roku?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they have competition.
Oh, so who's the competition?
Amazon. Big competitor.
Mm-hmm.
Probably their big one. But yeah, I'm really bullish on that company. And I think, you know, it'll be, I was on the board of a company called Tubi.
So tell me what Tubi, because I mean, you were on it and then it sold. And I'm like, wow, I didn't even know you were on it. So how did that come about? What is Tubi?
So think of Tubi like a Netflix, but for free. It's a streaming video offering.
Sounds like China.
we have the largest collection of shows and movies. So Netflix, they've really pared down their library.
Oh, interesting. Correct.
Yeah, they're doubling down on their own content. So they really don't have the long tail of content anymore. 2B's strategy was, one, amass the largest library of shows and movies. I think it was like 27,000 titles or something like that. Then two, use AI to try to help surface the videos that that people want to watch in the quickest fashion. And then three, make it all completely free. Because for a lot of us, we stopped paying for cable and that felt good. And now we're waking up and we've got 5, 6, 7 streaming services that when you add them up, we're paying more than we did before.
Yes.
So, we all have kind of this streaming sticker shock. And something like a Tubi is free. And so we marketed it as something that was complimentary to Netflix. It's not going to replace Netflix, but once you've watched kind of the big, premium shows on Netflix, and you're looking for something to watch, Tubi was a really good offering.
That's great. I'm going to download that. I'm sure my kids already use it. So how do you make money? How did it make money?
It's ad supported. Gotcha. I mean, the good and the bad part of the platform was there's no subscription, but in the middle of a movie, you might have an ad or two. So that makes it unique. Most people like that. Some people are annoyed by it.
And kids figure out a way around it. So they come to you. They came to you and said, be on the board. And how early did you get involved?
Well, I had a relationship with the company. Mm-hmm. The company that I started, TubeMogul, we were software to automate the buying of digital video ads, and we were plugged into Tubi as a supply source.
You got it.
Buy Tubi ads through TubeMogul software. So I knew the entrepreneur, and he was just a gem. And after we sold our company to Adobe, he invited me to invest and join the board. That was probably 2016, 17, something like that.
So not a long ride. And what round was that, in a B or a C that you participated in?
That was in the C round.
And they just got acquired by Fox. What was the number there that they got acquired for?
It was $500 million, which we sold the company in March during the pandemic. So Farhad, the CEO, entrepreneur, I mean, he just did an amazing job because, there was actually quite a lot of competition in the space. And you had the big guys like Peacock and others still investing in the space. And he got a deal done, after the pandemic had started, after Fox's market cap had been cut by 40%. But it was such a good fit for them because Fox is a traditional television company, and they really, over the long term, they have an existential crisis and they needed a streaming play. So what's fun now is if you ever catch like a football game on Fox, you'll see Troy Aikman, plugging Tubi.
That's still the coolest. Yeah. Like when I see golf now so ads, cool. I'm like, that's, I didn't make a fortune. I did gray as my first big win. But just to see, forgetting that I sold too soon or the company we sold too soon, but like to see golf now ads is still cool.
I agree. It feels good to be part of something that, could be a household name.
So you've seen the goal line as an operator, and now you've seen the goal line as an investor. They're different, but it's pretty fun to do it as an investor, right? Now you get the joy of what I have.
It's a lot easier as an investor.
Hey, hey now. Sure. It is so much easier. And I want to talk about this. Like the one thing, and now you're going into the investing side, and I'm like, we are going to lose a good operator. There is a shortage of operators. There is a plethora of ideas in the world of the cloud, but someone's going to drag you out of the bench because there's just not enough operators for all the great ideas out there.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think entrepreneurship is just gotten over glamorized, though. Mm-hmm. Being a CEO, being a founder. I mean, it never, like 10 years ago, it wasn't like the it thing to do. There weren't, HBO shows and accelerators and, all these rock star entrepreneurs. And I wonder how healthy that is, because at least with my experience, my entrepreneurship's brutal. Whew. It's so hard. And you know, for me, Tubemogul ended up being a 12-year adventure.
Right.
So, I mean, it was way longer than I thought it was going to be from the outset. And it really, you know, it's tough on your health and your relationships to, you know, do what needs to be done to build something special from scratch. So I have a lot of respect for entrepreneurs, but I just wasn't sure my body could handle it again.
No, I mean, that's fair. The number one thing I tell them, I'm going to, you know, we invest together. I'm going to, and you've been on both sides and I invest with you and you invest with me, but I try and talk people out of it. And they're like, nah, yeah, they think I'm nuts. Same. And I'm like, what are you guys? I'm doing my job. You know, this is like 7 to 10 years if you do a great job, right? Stocktwits is 12 years. You were 12 years. No one's telling these people that. Or everybody's lying to each other. I don't get it. What's the point of lying? This is like, why lie over something that's this much work? You know?
Yeah, it's not the easiest way to build wealth. You almost have to have like a personality flaw. You have to be unable to do anything else. Just you're so mission driven, or you're such a control freak, or the notion of autonomy drives you so relentlessly that you have to do it. Otherwise, it's just not worth it for most people.
Yeah, and I think that'll make you a great investor. Now, what excites you as an investor? So it's COVID, family's healthy, we finally have some good news, Pfizer. I joke all the time, this has been horrible, but corporate America was going to solve this because the money was on the line. You know, if it meant Disney coming up with a vaccine, they were going to do it after enough time because otherwise they're out of business. So with a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, what does the world look like to you?
I think that the nice thing about being an investor in startups is you don't have to prognosticate about the world. You can just try to figure out if the company you're investing in solves a problem, because you know it's going to take them 5, 7, 10 years, and the world's going to be different anyway. I mean, in my own life, I see, it feels like people are coming out. More deals are getting done. There's a lot of capital out there. But I do worry that it could be kind of a tough winter with the COVID cases coming up. So I try not to think about that and just try to think about the long term. And, am I investing in companies that could be impactful, meaningful companies?
And what areas do you like? Because I know you are long-term. So what areas, like, is it AI? Is it video? Is it doing what you did in the past, or is something completely different?
So I'm sticking to what I know, which is enterprise software. And within that group, one of our insights is that at Tubemogul, we leveraged AI to shift around ad spend dynamically to where the advertiser was getting the best bang for their buck. But truthfully, it was hard. We were really a software company. We were good at building software and features and products. And we used AI, but it was like this other part of the company. And dealing with data was just unwieldy. And I think the companies that win in the future, they kind of start off looking a little bit different. And more than just being software companies, they're data companies. They've got data rights. They know how to manage it, how to query it, how to catalog it. And they build their company around data and models and workflows. So I'm really bullish on, call it kind of AI first companies.
Huh.
And I think that the other insight that I have is that Tubemogul, I mean, you probably remember Google was like always nipping at our heels.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were like 3-6 months away, and they would just constantly knock off our best features. And that's what it's like to build a software company. With a company that's AI first or data first, I think you have the ability to build a moat that's just a little bit more unassailable. Because it's so unique and hard to do, and it's not just software.
So interesting. So do you think the company like that has to have their own data, are you saying, first? Well, obviously that helps. Bloomberg, StockTwits, we have Twitter, we have our own data, Google, we have our own data, so we'd have to fuck it up to blow it. But what do you mean by that? Can you get in without having your own data set first?
Well, it depends. For like application companies, yeah, I think you need to either have a data set or have a plan to develop one. So like, I'll give you an example. Recently invested in a company called Safely You. Mm-hmm. And they use computer vision to improve dementia care. They have a camera up in the corner of a room at an assisted living facility.
Oh man, I love this idea.
And using computer vision, they can tell whether or not the resident fell or not. And what happens without these things is older person, they're in a room by themselves, they fall, somebody comes in, they have no idea why they fell, and the older person can't really tell them, so they rush them to the ER.
So genius,
and
simple.
It's really simple.
Play the tape.
Exactly. They don't record everything, by the way. It's not like Big Brother's watching you. They just record a little bit of time before and after the event. But anyway, you think about this company, and they're building models. And their models have to detect, well, did they fall, or did they just sit down, or were they pushed down? And, you know, you kind of start with bare minimum amount of data, enough to kind of install it in a facility or two. Uh-huh. And then you have this ongoing loop of data, and the models just get better and better and better. And so this company, they're going to do great things. Who knows how big they'll be, but what's clear to me is that it's going to be very difficult to do what they're doing. They're not going to have like 5 knockoff companies just because they start to do well, because they'll have too much of a moat.
Yeah, we did this in Fund 3 with Gary did Robin Healthcare, which is just a little device in orthopedic surgeons' offices instead of the scribe, right? And then the doctor just talks. And, you know, in the old days, the doctor would just type into the computer, not look at the patient. And now, it is all just done in the cloud and the doctors are happy. It's not perfect, but like, it's taking forever. But like, first of all, to compete. So with your company, you really have to have a passion and someone has to have just been driven. Maybe it was a family member or just they like want to take care of old people. Like, you can't just copy these things because it's not just about the idea. It's so much execution and so much vision around the solution. So you're right. The moats get bigger. It's harder for the Googles like to just copy a feature.
Yeah, that's right. Because that company you invested in, like every transcription, their models get better and stronger.
It's hard. But once it gets going, man, it gets really fun. But you never know, because it's just, COVID slowed us down because doctors' practices, you think it would have been great, but they got imploded. They got more rules.
Right.
Doctors don't want to work. So like, you would think COVID would have worked for this one. It's worked for telemedicine, but it makes other medicine products harder. Whereas assisted living, so you've got the big trend going towards your way because everybody's sticking their parents somewhere. And that's my tagline. That's what my kids are saying to me. I give that tag. I go, Dad, you said it. Everybody's sticking them somewhere. And then, so were they AI people or hardware people, or what was their passion about this idea? And how did you find them?
The founder came out of an AI lab at UC Berkeley, and we started TubeMogul at Berkeley. So knew him from that ecosystem, and he was mission driven because he had some family members that had Alzheimer's.
See, it's always like that. That's what wins.
Yeah. Yeah. And he, the guy is also, an absolute killer. So he's learning really quickly, becoming a great CEO, and co-invested in that one with Foundation Capital.
I've
worked with, them.
Are they making the hardware or are they doing off the shelf? Robin ended up making their own. It just wasn't working the other way around.
Right now, they're making their own hardware, but the goal is to use off-the-shelf hardware over time. They really want to be a software company, not a hardware company.
Yeah, same. Very interesting. I gotta get you with Gary with that. Okay, so AI, totally agree. Not sexy, because everybody throws around the term AI, but that's not really AI. They're doing a lot of legwork before the AI moat begins.
Right. I'm doing some AI infrastructure companies, but... yeah, it's AI first with entrepreneurs that I think can go the distance.
And then is there any AI first public companies yet, or is it too early? Are there any companies that are like pure AI that you follow just to learn the industry?
I think Snowflake certainly benefits from the AI world, but I think most of the companies that I'm excited about right now are private.
Okay, that's good to know. But that's why I get excited, because the public markets kind of tip my hand. And then once you learn the private market, you got to then kind of look over to the public market and go, who are the hedge funds going to say in their meetings is this type of AI company? There's a lot of form fitting in the public markets. That's how my world works. So at TubeMogul, when it sold to, walk me through the ups and, like, walk me through what it felt like in the room to get the offer from TubeMogul. Because, you know, a lot of founders listen to the show. What does it feel like when you know?
Well, it felt great. I mean, we were tired. At the time when we sold the company, we were already public.
Yep.
So we'd been public for like 10, 11 quarters. And it, being a public company was really interesting. It was like best of times, worst of times. The part that was challenging was we were performing. If you remember, we had, you know, I think like 9 or 10 beat and raises as a public company, but more often than not, you know, we'd have the earnings call and the stock would go down.
Well, you were under a billion. That's just a no-no in today's world.
Yep. I mean, we were small. And then our comp sucked. We were in the ad tech space, and just investors really did not care for ad tech. So that was really, you know, disheartening to do all this work to go public and then not be able to create shareholder wealth, even though you're performing. I remember like the first town hall after the first earnings call, stocks down. Or maybe this was like the third one. But, you know, we had all these millennials, and as much as you tell people, like, don't look at the stock, don't look at the stock, people are looking at it. And there's so much financial press, like, it's just everywhere. And so you're telling people, look, don't worry about it. Just put on your Warren Buffett hat, and it's all about the long term and about our goals. And the team goes back to work, and then the next quarter at the same issue. So that was kind of, you know, the situation. So we decided to go out and look for, you know, strategic options. And we went out and we got some private equity offers and a couple offers from strategics. And Adobe was the best offer. It was an 80% premium to the share price at the time. And it felt awesome because we knew it was going to be a great home for the team. Like, we were just beyond the wealth, and we had had a little taste of it at that point because we were selling some stock in, you know, in the public market. It was just, they take amazing care of people, and it was a good strategic fit. So we were really proud of the deal, and it felt right.
And Adobe's had a good run since, so everything worked out.
Yeah. All of our unvested equity turned into Adobe unvested equity. And I think their Adobe stock was like $80, $90, something like that at the time. So that created a lot of wealth on the team and ended up being really retentive. Like, a lot of the team is still there and doing well.
And what was it like working inside the beast?
You know, the first couple of weeks, people were pulling me aside, telling me, hey, just so you know, whether you work 100% or 70%, you're kind of going to get to the same place. So don't kill yourself. And that was so foreign to me.
Yeah.
And in my identity at the time as an entrepreneur, it was all about getting shit done. And I didn't listen. And so year one, there was a lot of rage against the machine where we were trying to integrate faster, break the rules where we needed to. You know, we wanted to win still. You know, that it's tough to get things done in a large company. And Adobe is a company that is an amazing company, sure, but it's also a consensus driven place because they're so successful. So it's not a risk seeking organization like a startup is. So it took some time to adjust to that. But on the, you know, positive, Adobe is one of the largest enterprise sales forces in the world. So there were all kinds of companies out there where Adobe had like a dedicated rep, And all we had to do is reach out, and all of a sudden we were in front of that company. So it really helped accelerate sales. And then, you know, they just take amazing care of people. So, you know, all the benefits went from kind of, you know, silver to platinum overnight. And, you know, they had Adobe really prioritizes gender and other equity and things that I always wish we would have done better as a startup, but didn't. But they had the resources to focus on building, you know, a really equitable company, which I think our team was proud of too.
And so now that you step out and do this again, what part of the cycle, at the beginning or A rounds or B rounds, where do you want to focus?
I want to be pretty early on. So we're looking at kind of seed round.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for people that have already built a product. Just want to make sure that I'm working with people that can do a lot with a little, and they've already demonstrated the, you know, hacks that you need to build a product with no resources and to start to sell with little resources.
Mm-hmm.
So that usually comes together in kind of a seed round stage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, we're cutting kind of 250K to 500K checks in a seed round. And usually like a seed round now is like a $2 to $3 million round. And what we see happen is there's usually a lead that they're putting in $1 million to $2 million. And then the founder, the entrepreneur, they're trying to fill the rest of the round with people that they think are going to be useful. And just often they're disappointed. So I say our, by the way, because I'm doing a lot of this investing with John Hughes, yeah, who was my co-founder at TubeMogul. Our ethos has just been be really, really useful and helpful, and try to be the most helpful investor on the cap table. We think if you can do that, you're going to get allocation in a lot of great companies.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we did at the beginning, Tom and I. Now we do it with Gary. I don't think there's a shortcut to it. I think having the entrepreneur experience, you've got that going for you. And having a point of view, you have that going for you. And you just want to do it. So it's an it's always an exciting time to write checks, like, period. End of story. There's a lot of talent. I think that the thing that these kids don't have today is the amount of work that you're going to have to do. You can't just go and get on Facebook and find, you know, get customers. You've got to be able to use all the tools, and you got to know hardware. You got to know software. You got to know enterprise. You got to understand the consumer. It's competitive out there. So I think it's always a great time to be an entrepreneur. It's always a great time to be an investor. So I'm excited for you as you kind of head out on this. Where how do you think the valley in your part of the world has changed in COVID? And do you think you and travel as it relates to, you know, doing what you're doing now?
You know, I'm just looking out the window, and you know, 2 months ago, like, you couldn't see the sky here just because of the fires and the smoke and COVID. So I'm seeing a lot of people move out of the area. We were already in an era where companies were, they had their founders here, and they were building their teams on a distributed basis. That's like every single company I see now. Like, no one's trying to headquarter the company in the Bay Area as a strategy.
It's amazing. So it was like two years ago, that was like, no one saw that. It was just like people were blind to it.
And then San Francisco itself is a ghost town. And it's actually, just in the last couple of weeks, I've noticed it started to shut back down too. Like it seemed like San Francisco had done a pretty good job with COVID. There weren't a lot of cases compared to other major U.S. cities. And now it's getting bad and things are shutting down again. So it's just hard to see what that city looks like after all said and done.
06, 07, man, it was fun. Come, cheap hotels, you were just, everybody was out and pitching ideas and cheap. It was just different. And then by 2012, I was like, woo, it was fast. And now here we are again. It's like a tsunami hit it.
And there was already, before the tsunami hit, you probably felt this, there was something that changed in San Francisco, where what lies beneath didn't feel right. Yep. It's like all this wealth is being created, like obnoxious wealth everywhere.
Yep.
And then at the same time, you've got more homeless than you know we've ever seen. So you already kind of saw that, and now COVID is just a gut punch on top of that.
Yeah, no. 4 or 5 years ago, I was tweeting always about calling it San. I forget the names. I was just like, I remember it fondly coming out of, you know, 06, 07, 08. It was just horrifying and empty, but you could feel the energy, and this time it's going to be different. So yeah, hopefully, I mean, you're already outside the city. You're in Oakland, so.
Yep, we're in the East Bay. We're staying close to the Berkeley ecosystem, but we're, you know, backing entrepreneurs around the country.
Well, I'm excited for you. I really, it's fun to just catch up. I can't wait to do a deal together. Obviously, we chat all the time, but I think the AI, I mean, you have, you know, there's not many people doing, again, like you've picked an area that won't be crowded. It'll be crowded with brainiacs, but it's not going to be, you can't just throw the term AI around. So I'm excited for that. And hopefully to see you soon. I mean, have you been on, when was the last time you were on a plane?
This summer we did a quick trip to San Diego, to La Jolla Shores.
Oh.
And the family drove down and I flew back. That was the only flight this year though.
Are you enjoying the no travel?
Yeah, I am. I think we're focused on the silver linings of COVID, and we have young kids, so I'm enjoying not constantly being stuck in traffic, shuffling them to sports events, and just not being so busy all the time. And then our daughter, Maddie, who you met, she was at the IPO.
Mm-hmm.
She graduated high school recently, and I miss this kid's childhood, unfortunately. But she's doing a gap year.
Smart.
All of her gap year stuff was canceled, so she's around the house. So, which is just great. I feel like I get this bonus year.
Bonus year. You got the right attitude. Always did. All right, my man. I'm so happy to, thanks for coming on the podcast. I know you don't do this that often, but, you know, this will pass and we'll be doing deals and helping entrepreneurs. That's what you want to do.
That's right, brother. Thank you.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
Cheers. Tonka to Tonka. There you go. Brett Wilson.
Yeah.
You didn't even have any questions. I didn't let you ask a question.
I know you don't. That's okay.
So he's at the heart of it in the East Bay. And I mean, people will be lucky. Listen, if you got an AI business or enterprise startup, just hit me up. I'll introduce you to Brett. He's on Twitter. We'll put that in the caption. But just so focused as an entrepreneur.
Oh, yeah.
You got to get lucky because they're working for me. I mean, no, sorry. I'm basically just cheering them on.
Right.
People forget these stories. The internet, 2006, 2007, wasn't that long ago.
No.
These kids today with their TikToks and their Snapchats and their, it's funny, the Discord with this kid with the game. My son wasn't into gaming. Your sons are.
Yeah, one of them is, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Does he use Discord?
I don't know.
Because Knut doesn't ask.
No.
Anyways, this is Panic with Friends. We come at you twice a week. Subscribe makes it really easy on Google, on Apple Podcast app, or on Spotify. Search my name, Howard Lindzen. I also have a free blog, howardlindzen.com. I have a free email that you can subscribe to and talk about trends in the markets. And please tell your friends, hit the subscribe button and you will get an alert. Thanks, Knut. Thanks, DocTwit. See everybody soon.